So you guys have plenty of time to, this thing here is not, read your lesson, mm-hmm. and prepare, mm-hmm. so you know all about it then, right?
Not today, though.
Huh?
I was supposed to come home today and reread it, but I had company. So, I didn't figure I was supposed to tell him, see you later. I hadn't seen him in a couple of years. See you later, I got homework to do. I didn't
think
that I would have you to do so.
Well, see, you read it last week, so you should be...
I've read it three times.
Good. Hey, very good.
It, but I may not. I think it'll come back to my memory.
Sure it will. Sure it will. Yeah. Sure it will. The questions for tonight, I didn't give you any. See there? So you got a break. Got a big break, didn't you? But you have to write a 5-page essay on what we say in class. No, I'm just kidding.
No problem. I'll have 5 pages of these in class. No.
So just be your notes. Just be your notes.
Sometimes I'll get a sentence almost written. You think something else really good, and I go leave some space, and then I have a big space, and I can't finish it. But you can't remember it.
I like to take notes, but I have to, no one could read my notes because I have to listen. You know, I'm an auditory learner. I listen, I do best by listening. So when I take notes, I always take notes, you know, even like when we're with the rabbi, studying with the rabbi, I always take notes. But it's like you said, no one would read what I wrote at the end, and it wouldn't make any sense to them whatsoever. Okay, let's see here. Let's go ahead and get started. Okay, if you have your book, let's go to page, whatever page this is, chapter 3. That's a good page, isn't it? It'll be page 39, but it doesn't have a number on it. How's that? Okay, and of course tonight's title is Torah is More Than Law. And so I think that much of the stuff that we will discuss tonight will probably be, for some of you, just a little bit redundant, but hopefully we'll... bring out new aspects of things that we have not talked about before, but be a confirmation and a reiteration of some things that we've already said in the past, okay? I was going to try to do two lessons tonight, but the next lesson is on the Sanhedrin, and I don't want to try to cram two things into one. The Torah, this is actually a pretty short chapter. And the next chapter is a little bit longer, but, you know, how can you possibly sum up what the Torah is in one class? You can't. I mean, obviously, we've been years and years already with the class, and we haven't even given the summary yet, but I've heard individuals say that they've spent their entire life in, you know, at one point someone told me once that they had spent over 50 years studying the Torah, and they still didn't know what it meant. And I thought, well, that's silly. But then after you get involved in studying Torah, you realize that any knowledge that you had of Torah was actually just superficial knowledge. And then the deeper you go, the deeper the well is, and more there is to plumb, okay? Dr. Young starts off with Torah. And he starts off with the word Yara, and he uses that as the basis for the word, and then he tells us in about the second paragraph that this comes from the idea to shoot at a target with force or accuracy. But then he says it also means revelation, and the first foremost refers to the revelation of the nature and the character of God. Okay, so let's just stop right here for a second. Okay, this word Yara has the connotation of someone who's throwing something, shooting at something, or aiming literally at a target. So the idea of a Torah is a target, okay? But we've all learned in this class before enough to know that the word Torah, even from this word Yara, does not mean exclusively or strictly law, okay? So give me some synonyms. What else, how else can we translate Torah?
Principle.
Very good. Okay. What else?
I always thought when I explain Torah, I explain it as a set of instructions.
Instructions. Okay.
Teaching.
Very good. This word here, Yara, actually has a connotation and connection to the idea of teaching, okay? So we just have a few up here of the ideas that we have. Then how come, how do we get law out of Torah? How come it's always, when we read it, even as we read in this particular book here, he talks about the law. How do we get law out of Torah? How did this come about? Does anybody know?
Because when God gave, I believe it's because when God gave the instructions to, it was kind of like an oxymoron. If God says it, you do it.
Okay, but the problem is, from a Hebraic perspective, you don't use the word law. You use the word principle, instruction, and teaching.
That's how it was translated.
That Greek.
Okay, very good. Into Greek. Okay, the problem with Greek is that Greek it has these words, principle, teaching, instruction, etc., in the language, but that didn't suit the idea of translating the Torah and the word Torah. So the authors of the Septuagint, they translated it nomos. And that word basically does mean law, okay? But even though we have principle, instruction, and teaching that come out of the idea or the word Torah, is Torah law?
No.
It is. And yet it isn't. Yes and no.
Pick your poison. You got to have one or the other.
It's a set of instructions that include law.
Okay, listen, it's not a problem for it to be law, okay? Don't let that word law scare you. When we use the word law in our society, many times it has a negative connotation. Therefore, when people read the word law and associate that with the Torah, it can have a negative connotation, right? And the Torah does have some negative connotations, right? I mean, there's 365 negative things saying thou shalt not or you cannot do, okay? So it can have that aspect. But many times people actually, I think, misunderstand the words of Paul. And when they misunderstand the words of Paul, they start getting a very negative view of the Torah itself. Excuse me for a second. They get a very negative view of the Torah. And so it's very, very hard sometimes for the word law to be brought into a conversation, because if you start talking about law, then the first thing that most people say is what? Legalism. Okay? Now, I'm not afraid of that phrase, legalism, okay? Because actually the word legalism has to have a little bit of explanation to it. If you define legalism, and I guess the way I should say it is, it would depend on how you define what is legalism, okay? Now, some people can think that, you know, when we start looking at the mitzvot, right? When you start looking at the mitzvot and you start counting up the mitzvot, and that's associated with the law, some people can start saying, well, you have to do this, you have to do this, you have to do this, and you have to do this. And then they can become very, very stringent in the process. And that would be somebody who we would call a legalist, who's extremely stringent in the process. But the Torah is basically designed to be, a principle, an instruction, and a teaching. In the book of Proverbs, it says, don't forget the Torah of your mother and the wisdom, the chokhmah, of your father. Okay? So, you know, did the mother teach the child the Torah?
Yes.
A girl, she teaches Torah. But this is a boy that's in the conversation, so what could it possibly mean? Did the mother teach him the Torah, or what was the mother's job? What was the mother doing? Okay, very good. And she might have said, make sure you put on clean underwear and socks and et cetera. Yes, but it's still, exactly, it's still a teaching, the teaching of your mother. So it's still relative, and it's very, very important to us, okay? So Torah is translated at times as law. Now, one of the reasons that people look at the Torah from an extremely negative approach is because the writings of Chacham Shaul, Paul says, he said, the letter kills, but the spirit gives life. So how do we interpret that? If the letter is the Torah, the written Torah, and we let that be the thing that kills, then what is it? He said the spirit gives life, okay? So let me take this off of the board for the second, and let's ask the question number one. He says the letter, okay? And then he says the spirit. Okay, the letter kills, and the spirit does what? Gives life. Okay, how do we explain these two statements?
Could you say that what came to my mind was the written Torah, which is the letter, it kills. But the oral Torah is the explanation. It gives it life so that you get it in perspective.
Okay, very good. Very good, yes. Okay, but now let's... I think you're right on. I think you're absolutely right on. But let's get this out. Let's play this out a little bit to understand how it is that the Torah, the letter of the law, how it is it kills. And then let's decide if that's a negative or a positive.
It kills bad behavior.
Very good. Okay, so killing doesn't necessarily mean a negative thing. So if the Torah is an instruction and a teaching and all those things, what's it trying to teach us?
The
appropriate way to live, right? So if the letter does kill, then what is it killing?
It's killing the flesh, the negative. It's.
Could we say that it's killing anything that is,
contrary
to righteousness? Very good. Okay. So we understand that the letter kills. It's okay for it to kill.
The evil inclination would be another way.
Okay. Let's be very careful. Let's be careful with killing. It doesn't. You don't kill your evil inclination.
No, I know you're supposed to bring it under subjection, but some of the things that you would want to do. If people would just sit down and read, most people, when you come across, this is the truth, you come across people who are very anti-Torah, anti-instruction.
Right,
when they
sure.
sit down and read, they're like, this is not what I thought it was.
Right, exactly, exactly.
They're stunned.
Right.
But, so I may be using the wrong word. My terminology is incorrect on the evil inclination, but it's the things that we have to be told, we have to know that it's wrong to do certain things.
Actually, even though, let me try to explain. We don't kill the evil inclination. But in a same sense of the word, Paul says what? He says mortify the flesh, right? So that basically means to cut off or to kill that piece of the flesh. But it doesn't literally mean literally cut your hand off, pluck your eye out, do the things that we've said. What does it literally mean? It means bring it under control, right? So here we could also say that metaphorically he's not actually talking about literally killing or anything else. He's mortifying. He's saying cut off the hand, don't do this. So the letter of the law does what? It brings a restriction to the place that what happens is, you know, when there's a sin that can be committed, it brings a restriction and stops us from taking that step into sin, okay? Now, it says that the Spirit, and I think Gloria got it right on the mark. You know, sometimes when we read this word Spirit, we're thinking about the Ruach, the Holy Spirit, etc. And I don't disagree with those thoughts, but at the same time, I think the real intent is that it is the oral Torah, and the oral Torah, as she was saying, gives an explanation to the Torah, and therefore we understand that, guess what? Does it kill? Yes, it kills, but guess what it's really trying to do? It's really trying to restrict us from behavior that's inappropriate or displeasing to God. Okay, because if we'll go back to the passage there, second paragraph, it said the verb yara, from which the noun Torah comes, means to shoot at a target with force or accuracy. We'll talk more about this in a minute. It also means revelation, and first and foremost refers to a revelation of the nature and character of God. Okay, so he's telling us here something that is a repeat of things that I've told you before, is that the Torah is a revelation of the character of God. And so how would you define the character of God in the Torah? How would you see understanding, or how would you come to an understanding of the character of God from the Torah?
Because it tells you, it gives you all the characteristics of him. It gives you, he's a merciful God. It tells you he's
okay.
Kind. It talks about kindness. It talks about, you know, his...
Okay, so as we read the Torah, we can read that he's merciful, he's good, he's... all these things. And so in that particular aspect, we can read through, and as it tells us, for example, and we'll try to come back around this, in Exodus 20 and 1, and we'll try to get to this in a minute, but Exodus 20 and 1, he says, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt. Okay? So that's a revelation of his character, right? One, he's a God that does what? That actually brings liberty, right? Very good. He's a God that brings us to freedom. Now, that's interesting, because what a lot of people would tend to say is that if we're going to come under the Torah, you're coming under bondage, right? Isn't that the way they try to see it?
That's the way they want you to see it, but you're coming into freedom, if you ask me.
Well, exactly, but they will say, and they even may feel that way for themselves, if you tell me that there's 613 mitzvot, then you're bringing me under a bondage, right? I mean, that's how they look at it themselves. I'm not saying that...
I know, but they're looking at it like that because they've not even bothered to read it. Nobody, not even Yeshua, kept all 613, because not all 613 apply.
He didn't keep 613?
No, because they didn't all apply to him. If someone would read it and see how it's broke down, and common sense would tell you, there's certain laws women deal with you men will never have to deal with.
Exactly. And so the whole issue is that when we look at the Torah, and we look at the 613 mitzvot, they would think that they are being brought under bondage. But then he says Paul will say, Chacham Shaul will say, he said that we find liberty and that we're set free by the Spirit. Okay, so if we're set free by the Spirit, then how can you relate that to keeping 613? How can you, even though we don't keep 613, you women have what you have, I have what I have, the farmer has what he has, the priest has what he has, the king, etc., 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 right? Okay, so, but even the ones, let's say, that are applicable to us as the individual, you as the individual, how can you say, Sister Val, you keep those mitzvot that are appropriate to you, but you're walking in liberty? How can you say that? How can you say you're walking in liberty when you are observing X number of commandments?
Because it gives you liberty. You're not bound by sin.
So in other words, then it has to be something in relation to sin. And so the Torah is binding. You are bound to the Torah. But the interesting thing is that the binding that you have in the Torah is a binding to God. So are you bound? Oh, absolutely. And I hope I never get free. Right? Yeah. But he says that the Torah brings what? It brings liberty, and it brings liberty from what? Sin and death. So if you understand the letter of the law, and you understand the spirit of law, which is the intent of the law, which is given through the oral Torah, then you will understand that, guess what? Then I'm liberated from the law of sin and death. But I'm liberated from the law of sin and death, and I'm bound to God. See, you have to be bound to something. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying?
You're serving a master at all times.
All the time. You're always going, I am the Lord your God that brought you out of the land of bondage. So when he says, you were in a different bondage, but I brought you out. What does that mean?
You're his and he's yours.
Now there's been a transfer of ownership, right? You did belong to something else or someone else. You know, they were in Egypt. They belonged to Pharaoh, etc., right? But now I don't belong to Pharaoh or Egypt or that system anymore. Now I belong to God, and I am consequently now bound to God. It's so interesting that that this system is exactly the way the system goes. But Paul uses a word, and I'll use a Greek word just because I could use both. I'll use both. Eved, E-V-E-D, means a servant, or a doulos, which means the same thing, a bond servant. And Paul says that he is a servant or a slave to Messiah, to the messianic thing. So he's telling them that, guess what, I am a slave. So it's kind of like pick your poison, so to speak. You're going to be in bondage to something, and you have to choose what you're going to be bound to. I like Fiddler on the Roof. You know, I don't know when the last time you watched Fiddler on the Roof, but he sings the song. He gets in the middle of the little thing, and he said, "If I were a rich man," right? And he sings the little ditty, "If I were a rich man." And then he says that someone says that being rich is a curse. He said, "May I be smitten with it and never recover," he says. But that's us, right? Who wants to recover from servitude to God? Because actually, when we get the 613, we're going to find something very peculiar here. Look at the paragraph one more time. Second line, starting at the second line, it also means revelation, and the first and foremost refers to the revelation of the nature and the character of God. So the nature and the character of God is actually also revealed in all 613 mitzvot. Okay? So if the character and nature of God is revealed in the 613 mitzvot, how can we see God, and how can we we can see him through the 613? That's easy, right? But how do we then understand the character of God through that? We have to understand that each mitzvah is an expression of some aspect of God or some characteristic of God. So if he tells you to remember the Sabbath to keep it holy, you know, you need to know and understand Shabbat, right? And the reason that you need to know and understand Shabbat is because then that will be a revelation of his particular character as associated to that particular mitzvah, actually that set of mitzvot. But we know that from the very beginning that it said on the seventh day he rested. So, I mean, in the very beginning, as you study the book of Bereishit, you read just a little bit, and all of a sudden, you begin to see the character and nature of God. As you study Bereishit, as you study Genesis, I mean, in the beginning, God. So it should be clear, immediately clear, that this is what? A revelation of God. Right? So that as we're looking to the Torah itself, we will find a revelation of God throughout. And now, the reason that he has given these 613, and let me take this off, is their mitzvot. Okay, I don't know if you can see it. Mitzvot. What if we just take this part of that off there? Can you read that word? Tzvaot. Okay, tzvot. That's the way we would read that, like that, right? Does that strike something in your mind? Tzvot. How about the Lord of hosts? Okay, so tzvot is actually the root of mitzvot. And it has the idea of a team or a collection of people or a connection. Okay? So, a mitzvah is what?
A way to connect with God.
Okay? So, when, let's use an analogy, right? So, you're going to have an apple. You're going to eat an apple for a snack or whatever. What's the blessing? What blessing do you say? Very good. From the tree, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, when you say this, blessed are you, O Lord God, King of the universe, etc., when you say all this prelude, this bracha to this, immediately we're going to partake of this apple and we're going to eat this apple. What happens if you don't say the blessing? Do you still get energy and all this stuff from the apple? Absolutely. So what happens when you say the blessing? Because remember, you're not really thanking God, you're saying a blessing for this. Blessed are you, O Lord God, King of the universe, that brought this particular thing forth. Okay? So if you say the blessing, then what happens when you eat the apple?
I'm not exactly sure. It's still the same physical response, but spiritually you've acknowledged and communicated with God, and you have blessed him for the apple, but you still get the same thing out of it.
Okay.
Or am I missing something?
Okay, well, look it. I didn't clarify the answer real well, so I'll try to explain. Okay, we're supposed to say 100 brachot every day, 100 blessings, okay? From including the saying the Shema, the Shemone Esrei, the number of times you wash your hands when you eat your food, etc., etc. So Paul said what? Pray without ceasing. So we're supposed to continuously be in conversation with God. But the idea of just, if we eat an apple, for example, I will use this as an example. If we eat an apple and we don't say the bracha, what happens is the rabbis say you might as well stole this from God. It's as if you stole it from him. It was his, and then he gives it to you. You stole the energy. You stole the whatever benefit you derived from this apple. You stole it from God because you didn't appropriately bless him for giving you the fruit or the food or etc., right? But when you do say the blessing, what happens is you make this connection with the divine source, with God, and you you actually not only now infuse your body with physical energy, you infuse it with also the spiritual energy that was is supposed to be a part of that thing that you eat. So when we eat anything according to rabbinic thought that's bigger than the size of a grape or an olive, and when we put that in our mouth, we're supposed to say the blessing for it. So if you ate potato chips, if you ate a bag of potato chips, you drink a soda, you whatever you do, you're making a connection with God through that, and then the energy that's actually resonant within that, the spiritual energy, and of course you realize now we're not talking about Peshat, right? Okay, is infuses your literally your entire spiritual being when you do that. But then you're connecting straight to the energy of God Himself with that entire process. Okay, does that make sense? Do you understand?
So if Adam and Eve would have said a blessing when they ate the forbidden
fruit, no. You can't. How can you do that? You can't say a blessing for eating a fruit that you're commanded not to eat. For example, if you're going to sit down and have a barbecue sandwich, and when I talk about barbecue, obviously like I'm talking about barbecue pork, right? So are you going to sit down and say the motzi because you had a barbecued pork sandwich? Can I go one step further? Most of us here are at least trying to move toward kosher, right? Can you say the same bracha, the motzi, over a cheeseburger? You can't, can you? Why? Because it's not permissible. It's not a permissible food. So, you know, you can't say the bracha over that food because it's not acceptable. And this goes back to the idea of, you know, how some groups, they want to bless God for the food. They want to thank Him for the food, and then they ask God to bless the food and make it holy, right? How does that differ from the way that Jews do it?
Because you bless God.
They always bless God, but they never eat anything that God wouldn't, you know, have them to eat, period, right? So they don't have to worry about the food being blessed or it being holy or appropriate, because it is holy because they're eating the appropriate food and built in the appropriate way, okay? So the letter does kill. The Torah does kill. It does have negative aspects, but it does have also these positive aspects of connection. Let me ask you another question here. It says, I'm still hung on this one line, okay? I'm sorry. And you're supposed to, you know what the word thresh means, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, you're supposed to, that's right, we're threshing this one sentence until we wear it out. It says, it also means revelation, and the first and foremost, well, let's back up, I apologize, to the very first of that particular paragraph. The verb yara, from which the noun Torah comes, means to shoot at a target with force or accuracy. And we also said that the Torah means to teach. It's instruction. And we also said it's a principle. Okay, so I looked at this and I said, the Torah means to teach, the Torah means to instruct, and the Torah means a principle. How does that relate to God and a revelation of the character of God? And I'm just going to focus right now. Let's just focus on this one, okay? Let's just focus on teaching. Let's not worry about the other two right now. Let's just focus on teaching. How does this reveal a characteristic of God?
He's a teacher.
Okay.
I know you're looking deeper. But
no, actually, I'm looking for that. I'm looking deeper, but that's where I want to start, right? He is a teacher, right?
He wants us to know. He doesn't want us to be ignorant. It says all your word, he doesn't want us to be ignorant.
That's right. So the whole idea of giving you or I a Torah is because He is. The nature of the word Torah, it means to teach, and it's a revelation of His character, and His character is one of teaching.
To be like God.
To be like God is to be what? A teacher, right? Yeah. to teach others, specifically to teach others the Torah, right? And so in this aspect here, he reveals his character even in the definition of the word Torah, because he wants us to be instructed in the principles of the Torah itself. So he's a teacher. So how would that relate to you or I? We should be teachers as well, mm-hmm. right? And so it's not too difficult to comprehend that Messiah would be
a teacher,
etc., right? And isn't this amazing? Now listen to this. Isn't this amazing? When you look at the Torah system, this entire system, if we were to go to Perkei Avot, and chapter 1, verse 1, it says, Moshe Kibal, Moses received the Torah at Sinai. And then what did he do? He Mesorah. He handed it down to Yehoshua, right? How did he hand it down to him? He just says, okay, here you go. I kept all my notes from all the sessions when I was sitting up there conversing with God and writing down the Torah. And here you go, Yehoshua, here's my notes.
It's oral.
It's oral, okay? It's interesting because there's a passage in Reuven, where it says that Moshe would sit down with Aaron, his brother, and he would teach him what he learned from Hashem in the in Shemayim in the heavens, right? And then it says that after he had taught him, then his son Eliezer would come in. Aaron's son Eliezer would come in, and he would repeat the lesson with Aaron present and the Eliezer present. And this continued till Aaron sat there for four times. And then Moshe could get up and leave. Why could Moshe get up and leave?
Because Aaron then knew exactly how to pass the instruction on.
And on and on and on and on. So isn't it interesting that the entire system is built, this system of Torah transmission is, first of all, revealed in the character of God. He's a teacher. But the only way to get it is for it to be passed from a teacher to a student on down. So because the nature of God is to teach, said Moshe, Kibal HaTorah from Sinai, Har Sinai. Okay? He received it at Sinai. So actually, we could say it a different way, and we would say it how if we said it differently? This is.
Are you wanting us translating into English?
No. You don't. You can translate it into English, and that's fine. But you, Moshe Kibal HaTorah, actually here he gets it from God. That he's on Sinai, is on top of the mountain, is just a synonymous with that he was there face to face with God, right? And that's what your book says. This is where he received the Torah here from God face to face. Okay, so. How many times do you think Moses sits up there and receives it from God?
How many times he has to go? Every time he has to go up the mountain.
It shows that he went up there several times, right, to get it. But if we repeated that refrain from a Reuven, I think it's 53 or 54b, that Moses sat and he taught, and Aaron listened and he listened and listened and listened, then you know that, guess what? Moses listened and he listened and he listened. And all Moshe being greater than all of us, you know, he had a higher capacity to learn, but most likely he went through it four times. Why four times? Anybody want to tell me that?
Fish out, parties.
Okay, and? Oh, okay, very good. Now just make sure you guys were all on the same page, right? Okay? So, It's a revelation of the character and the nature of God. Not only is it a revelation of this teaching thing, but let's stretch this one more, okay? If to you, let's just make a number, because there today, with the way the world is today and the way certain situations are, some mitzvot don't apply to us that would have applied earlier, and etc., right? So let's just pick a number, okay? Let's say that Gloria has to keep 75 mitzvot, okay? And you, a woman in the relationship that you have, okay? So, Brother Chuck, let's say that he has, because he's a man, right? So he's going to have a few more, right? So let's just say 400. At least 400. she's trying to enslave you, Brother Chuck. Okay, so she said 400. So we'll stick with that. Obviously, we know it's not that many, right? But okay, let's suppose here now that Gloria, she keeps her 75, and Chuck, he keeps his 400. Okay. When we see Chuck keep his 400, we see Gloria keep her 75, we see this, what are we going to see in those individuals when they're keeping their mitzvah? What are we going to see?
Righteousness.
Okay, righteousness, absolutely. Okay, but let's keep...
character.
But we'll see God's character, and no question, okay? So we should see, in keeping these mitzvot, we'll see the righteousness or God's character. But what other character will we see?
Teaching.
Okay, teaching, absolutely. What other character? I'm looking for something else, obviously.
Character of Messiah.
Well, let's don't go there yet.
Okay.
Because I'm getting there, okay? I'm going to get there to the Messiah thing. But I needed to go this way first, and hopefully it'll make sense when I get there, okay? What other character are we seeing?
Devotion?
No. I didn't say characteristic. I said character. How about... you see Gloria and Chuck? You see their character.
Oh, okay.
Right? I don't care if he has all 613.
Right.
You still see Chuck.
Right.
And you see the way that Chuck does it, but the 613, the 400, the 75, they bring out your character and his character. They are your character. Or let's put it this way, they are your true character. So, and if we, let's just say that Gloria got up one day and she didn't feel so good, so she only kept 70 of her mitzvot that day. So what happens in the process of only keeping 70 mitzvot?
If I was doing the best I could,
her whole character wouldn't be there.
I'm not going to drag you into sin, okay, and not say that you sinned. It's not about that. But you just didn't live up to the potential of your character that particular day, right?
Shine was probably a little less.
Your shine wasn't so good, okay? But you understand, and it would be the same here or whatever, if we don't fully live up to the potential, if we don't keep all of the mitzvot applicable. And believe me, we all struggle every day to do, you know, our particular aspect. But this is actually our true character. This is our character. This is the true nature of what we really want to do and what we want to seek after, what we want to become, right? We want to live up to the person, the real person that we are inside, okay? Now, there was something that would have tried to keep us from doing that, and that was? The Yetzer Hara, okay? But the battle that we had this day where Gloria only kept 70 and the Yetzer Hara got the other 5, right?
Mm-hmm.
So does that mean, what does that mean with regards to this Yetzer? How do we interpret this?
Perhaps he's a little stronger.
stronger the next day, and it's a little bit harder to overcome.
Okay.
He's gotten a lighter hand on.
So the day that Gloria is 70, and she sits on her bed at the end of the night, and she's ready to say the bedtime Shema at night, and she stops for a couple of minutes, and she reflects and says, only did 70 today. My Yetzer got the best of me, and I only did 70. So what happens tomorrow?
I'm going to get up and start all
over. Not only do you start over, and absolutely you start over, but you do have a little bit of your reflection says, guess what? You know, I didn't quite accomplish 75 mitzvot, so tomorrow I'm going to really pay attention and keep guard and watch.
Fruit,
very good, very good.
Do we not actually, could you not say that we, I know we judge ourselves, but don't we, if you think about it, when we reflect, we're threshing ourselves, I mean, it's sifting, it's more than just a judgment, it's an active, because we're interactive with our own selves.
Sure, oh, absolutely, and it's an introspection that, you know, we know that at a particular time of the year that there's a serious time of introspection, right? But actually, you know, at the end of each day, we're supposed to have that introspection and look into ourselves and perhaps, if you will, take an accounting and say, well, I did this good or I didn't do that good, etc., right? So each day we stop and take that counting for ourselves, and then... Okay, that's a great question. That's a wonderful question. That's a wonderful question. Let's look at this. Okay? 248 and 365. Okay? We know that these are negative or prohibitive. Okay? And these are positive. Positive mitzvot wanting us to do something, right? So Chuck's question says, you know, if out of these mitzvot here that we had to keep, if we didn't do our number, whatever our number should be, do we need to repent or what? Okay, let's look at these mitzvot. 248 are the positive and or constructive things that you're supposed to do, okay? So in a day's time, when we look at the out of these particular mitzvot, out of the positive mitzvot, when you look at those particular mitzvot and you look at those, you say you're supposed to honor your mother and father, etc., etc., okay? You do those things. Those are positive things. You're supposed to love the Lord your God, on and on, right? Okay, so when we look at these things, it's interesting because the 248, let's say it like this, they're constructive. Okay? So what that would mean, what does constructive mean?
Building.
Building, okay? So with the 248, we're building something. What would we be building?
Good character.
Okay?
And a connection to God.
The temple of God.
We're building a temple to God. Very good. We're building, making a connection with God, etc. Building our character, someone said. Okay, these things are constructive. So when we keep one of the 248... we're actually in the process of building something up. Our character, the world, the spiritual world, all these things. We're building these things up, okay? Now, with the 365, these things, if these are constructive, what would you say that these are?
Destructive.
Okay?
Actually... bad connotation.
Yeah, I understand. So we could say destructive. Let's rephrase that, because actually the 365, if we don't steal, if we don't, etc., right, they give us a status quo. Okay? They give us a status quo. So in other words, they don't build anything, but they literally really don't tear things down. Unless you're, if it tells you, for example, now we have to be careful how I say this. If it says, thou shalt not steal. Okay? And a particular rabbi gave an illustration, so I'll just use this illustration because I think it was kind of neat. Let's suppose tonight you stop down on the court square in Paris. And it's kind of a nice evening outside. You know, you decide that it's such a nice evening, we want to take a walk around the square in Paris, okay? So you're walking around the square there in Paris, and you come right there to Moon Jewelers. There's a jewelry store there. And you look, and lo and behold, laying on the ground, right in front of you, there's a brick. And there's a necklace inside of there. It's very expensive, right? Brick. Necklace, brick, necklace.
Window.
Break window, take necklace, right? Okay, so if you decide that, you know, maybe you're not even tempted, right? You just keep walking and you go past and you almost stumble over the brick because you don't realize, you know, you could have thrown the brick in the window, right? Did you build anything?
No, you just didn't do something.
You didn't bring a negative aspect. You did not steal.
Which is a good thing.
Right, it's an absolutely good thing, but you didn't build something. You only maintained status quo.
Okay. That makes
you see
sense.
What I'm saying?
Yeah.
You didn't the positive mitzvah of say charity does what?
It builds
something up. Okay, you see what I'm saying? So the 248 build, the 365, now if you actually did steal, then you are creating a negative. But the commandment says what? No, don't steal. So if you keep that one and you don't steal, all you did is maintain. You see what I'm saying? So these here, now if you violate one of the 365, you do damage the world. You see what I'm saying? But here, you actually build the world. So through the 248, you construct or build the spiritual world. And the essence is, in essence, you bring down spiritual energy into the world and you help the world move toward its tikkun, its healing, its repair. Okay? So now back to Chuck's question. What would you say, Chuck? Let's say that, you know, obviously we realize out of these 365, the ones that are relevant to us, because, you know, some are relative to women, etc., right? So the ones that are relative to us, let's say at the end of the day, you didn't commit any of the 365. You didn't violate any of the 365. But you did, at this point, you did, let's just say your number was 75, okay? We'll make that will set the magic number. But on this day, you were only able to do 70, as we said. So did you construct or build the world?
Yes, maybe not as much.
Maybe not as much. Maybe not quite as much as 75, but you still did come short, right? So it's a situation where when we look at it and we reflect on it, we still do want to repent, right? We could have done that, but for whatever reason we didn't, right? So we see that in this process here, the 75, I should have kept that, but I didn't. But more than repentance, I think, is reflection. To where that what you say is, guess what? I actually was a positive spiritual force in this world today, but I could have been better if I would have only did these other five mitzvot that were my responsibility. Okay, does that basically answer that question? Okay, and it's interesting because in the inception of anything, is the totality of the thing. Okay? So, for example, if we look at a child, when the father emits the seed and the seed and the egg come together, that's a point of initiation. But that's a positive side and a negative side. You understand? Because the feminine and the masculine emulate the positive and the negative, right? And you don't think of it so much in the positive and negative, just the feminine and the masculine, okay? But with the seed, it's interesting and to draw this analogy, and so please don't be, just understand what I'm saying, okay? When the male gives the seed, how many seed does he give? Bunches of seed, right? He gives all of these seed. What does the woman's body do? What does it do?
Generally one.
Usually one.
It takes it and nurtures
it. How many does it do? It does it do all of them?
No, just one.
So what it does is it says it picks out of the multitude of choices, it picks one, and that's the one it picks. It has an infinite, perhaps not infinite, but it has this gigantic quantity of things that it can pick from. Have you ever seen those people that, you know, they get ready to go on vacation, they go to some place and they got an itinerary or they got a brochure, and they could go mountain biking, they could go skiing, they could go all that. So they sit all day in the hotel room trying to figure out what they're going to do.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So they have all these potentials, but they waste the whole day trying to figure out what they're going to do and they don't do it, right? Okay, this is how the masculine and the feminine, they work together. The feminine, it says, no, this is what we're going to do. And it picks the one and it does that, okay? But it's interesting because back to our Exodus 20 and 1, which we've already stated, and it says what? It says that I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt. Okay, that is the first positive mitzvah. Okay, so...
Is that considered feminine or masculine?
That's my question to you. Feminine or masculine? Are you sure?
Well,
we said, listen. If the masculine is considered positive and the feminine is considered negative,
it has to be masculine.
The masculine is positive, the feminine is negative. Okay? So here we have a positive. He said, I'm the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt. Okay? But all the other 613 commandments are inside of this one commandment. Right? That's your homework for next week. Figure out how. Huh?
Because it's
God, okay? And it's not just a statement, it's a command. I'm the God. I am to be your God, the God that brought you out of the land of Egypt, okay? But then what does the next commandment say? What does the next verse say? It's the negative. It's the equal opposite, if you will, of that. It says, don't put any other gods before me, okay? But out of this, this is the seed right here which everything else emanates from. All 613 come out of this right here.
Okay,
I have
something's gone over my head, or I've missed something. How do we get that the female is prohibitive?
She's restrictive. Okay, there's a million seed, and she says one.
Okay, well, in my mind, when I was listening to your, I get that. But in my mind, I translated restrictive as decisive. She made the decision.
Sure, but it's still. It doesn't matter. It's still on the negative side because, you know, the positive is limitless, right? I have all of these things I could do, but restrictive says, no, we're not going to do all of those. We're doing this.
Okay.
Okay? So it makes the choice. It says this is the choice.
It's always on the left side.
It's always the left side. It's also the side of compassion.
Mercy. It's always on the left side.
Okay. So you see that all the 613 are in here, right? All 613, because again, back to our book, the 613 are expression of the character and the nature of God. Okay? So when he says, I'm the Lord your God that brought you out of the land of Egypt, what does that say about stealing? What does that say about murder? Huh? No. Wait a minute. That's not what I said. I said, if what does this commandment say about stealing and murder?
He defines his characteristic right there, so that's showing you that you don't steal and murder because he does it.
Okay.
So, see, you derive out of the fact that he is God, you derive from that not to steal, not to murder, not to commit adultery, not to do those things. Because he is God, that's his character. If you have a connection with God...
Okay, I approach that from the wrong aspect in my mind because I'm approaching it as if you're instructing someone who doesn't know.
No, I'm talking about you in this room tonight.
Okay, that's fine. I got that now. So I did answer that.
So, but you understand, right?
Yes, I do.
So when he said that, the words "I am the Lord," that's an expression of everything that he is.
Yeah, it's saying, look at me and see what I am.
Exactly. And so when you look at him and you look at his character, which we need the rest of the Torah to define, right? Because if that's all I had, I would need a little bit more. You know, I'm simple enough that I say, wait a minute, you know, I mean, I know it's God. But, you know, the little kids not long ago, they wore that little bracelet and it said WWJD. You know, what would, I think it was a YD, wasn't it?
No, what WWJD,
what would Yeshua do?
For me, the question is, what did Yeshua do? Been that for a long time.
Yeah. Okay, so you understand the concept, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so hopefully what we've at least threshed out of this particular chapter is that the Torah is God. It's the expression of his character and nature. And the 613 mitzvot are 613 connections that we make with God. Okay? But back to where we talked about the letter kills and the spirit gives life. We just write letter and spirit. Okay? So when we have the spirit, which is the oral Torah, and we have that, it says to do what? It says to build a fence around the letter. And actually, it's interesting because more people have trouble with the fences than they do with the letter. Right?
Mm-hmm.
You can go convince them that here's the Torah, read the Torah, and the Torah says, right here it says, but when you go get your Mishnah out and you quote them a Mishnah and it says, because it has a fence around this, which is the spirit, right? Mm-hmm. What happens then?
They say it's legalism.
They start calling it legalism. They start calling it a lot of other things. But then it says, well, wait a minute. If this is what gives life, then what are they looking for? They're looking for the explanation and the way to bring this into fruition through the Spirit, through the oral Torah. Because we don't understand. If I tell you, Chuck, tomorrow night you better keep Sabbath. You know, if I said that, then you say, well, Walter, how do I keep Sabbath? What am I supposed to do, right? It's one thing to just tell an individual that he has to do something, but if you don't explain to him how it's done, but when the individual begins to see that there's candles and there's wine and there's all of a sudden, what happens then? And bread... It gives life. It becomes alive. It's not a thing of, you know, you just gave me this commandment to do, and I have to keep this commandment. All of a sudden you say, well, we get to drink wine. Oh, excuse me, I'm sorry. And you light the candles. Each one of these things has a symbolism and a beauty to it, and that's what gives it life. That's the beauty of the whole thing. So it's not like hammer on my head and make me keep a commandment. It's like when you begin to understand the Oral Torah can illuminate these things and let us know why we're supposed to do those and the beauty behind it. And that's because in many of these things, many of the things that we do, there are plain, simple reasons why not to do those things. But why should we not mix wool and flax? There's a commandment that says you can't mix wool and flax. Come on, you got to have a reason. There's got to be a reason to this.
But no, there is a reason, but I don't know what it is.
Who knows?
God does.
That's, no, it does not. Does not. These are what?
Those are the
chukim.
You do them just because God said do them. Or
statutes.
Yeah.
Often translated statutes. The chukim. Okay? So there are things that we are not illuminated and we don't understand, but there are some things that out of the Old Torah, when we read them, we say, oh. Now, somebody can ritually go through the motions of lighting the candles and drink a glass of wine and sing a song and salt a piece of bread and on and on and on. And it can be mundane ritualistic aspects. But guess what? You know, the whole idea of, say, sitting down to the Sabbath table is looking at the candles and say, well, what why do you light candles? Right? What do they represent? You know, why do we drink a glass of wine? Why do we salt the bread, etc., etc.? So behind the whole answer is again the question.
Ma.
Okay. Why? In the few remaining minutes, let's go to page 43, and in page 43, it builds off of Dr. Young builds off of Matthew 5:17, actually going to about verse 19, where, let's just go ahead and go there. Matthew chapter 5. Do not think that I am come to destroy the Torah. Okay, let's get rid of that. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm a pretty simple person. And when someone tells me they didn't come to destroy something, I kind of take that to mean that they didn't come to destroy something. Okay? So if I told you that I didn't come to destroy the Torah, Yeshua says I didn't come to destroy the law, then what would you surmise?
That it wasn't done away with.
Well, no, let's don't go there yet. His purpose in life, his mission was not the abrogation and destruction of the Torah.
He came to, Yeshua came to confirm it, to validate it.
Okay, let's get there in a minute, okay? Let's get there, okay? He said, I didn't come to destroy the Torah or the prophets. And so we understand here that now he's literally moving on and he's accepting all, literally, all of the Tanakh, right? He said, I am come not to destroy. And so here you have this thought twice, a reiteration of the same thing, but to fulfill. Now, here the people typically want to use this word as the idea of nullifying it and then setting it aside. But that's not what it is saying. Now let's read the Perkei Aviot from the book. He has a vote. If you go on page 43, the third paragraph down, said in rabbinic literature we find a similar language to express the same idea. For example, Avot 4:11 says, "Each individual who fulfills the Torah in the midst of poverty shall in the end fulfill it in the midst of wealth. But each individual who cancels the Torah in the midst of wealth shall in the end cancel it in the midst of poverty." Here the word fulfill is kayim, and the word for cancel is betel. He says only Mishnaic Hebrew, not Biblical Hebrew, uses these verbs in this manner. What this tells us actually is very interesting is that the New Testament, the Nazarene Codicil, was written in Mishnaic Hebrew. Okay? It was the Hebrew of that particular time, of that particular day. But it's interesting now. He says those who fulfill it in poverty are going to fulfill it someday in what? In riches. And if you cancel it or you nullify it, what's going to happen? If you do it in wealth, you're going to, it's going to be the same way. Okay? Now, understand this. So let me draw an analogy, and we'll kind of sum up with this analogy. I want to ask a couple of questions first. Okay? I'm going to take the long road. Okay. When you go to get your driver's license, you study a little book, right? And you study this book, and you go through this book, and it gives you all these particular rules and give you all these regulations that apply to how you drive, okay? So you pass the test, and they give you a driver's license, they take your picture, and they give you your driver's license, and they turn you loose on the street. You're going down the highway, you're headed home to Murray, and as you're headed home to Murray, you look up, and the speed limit says 55, okay? And Brother Chuck's driving, he says to Sister Val, he says, in the glove box, he said, I have the handbook that you study for the test. He said, look in the book and see if it says that on 641 North that I have to do 55 mile an hour. Does it literally say in the book that you have to drive 55 mile an hour on the highway going to 641 North?
No, but yes.
Okay, very good. Huh? Okay, it is posted, and you see it, but you say, well, so what? It's not written in the book that I on 641 North, I have to keep this particular speed.
But it is.
How is it?
It says you obey the posted speed.
Ah, very good. So even though it doesn't specifically say 641 North, you have to do 55, you have to do it because in the book it tells you you have to obey all the traffic signals and all the signs, etc. Okay? So just because some things are not written in the book doesn't mean that they're not applicable. Okay? Now that was free. That was my rabbi trail. Okay? But now listen. So let's suppose that Chuck leaves, he and Sister Val leave, and they go to Murray, and they look up and they see the speed limit sign and it says 55, and so Chuck, he checks his speedometer and he's doing 55, and he drives and he gets to Hazel and it says 25 or 30 or whatever that speed limit is, goes through there. And then so he slows down and he drives very carefully through Hazel. He gets on the other side, the sign says 55, and then he goes on to Murray and he obeys the traffic lights and signals and does all of this stuff all the way home. Did he fulfill the idea of the book? He didn't have any wrecks, you know, he left here and safely, he arrived there safely. Did he fulfill the book? Did he fulfill what the book says? Okay, So Chuck fulfilled the law.
Except for one thing.
Okay.
Safety comes first.
Right. Okay. So if the conditions were different, if it was snowing real, real difficult, doesn't matter if it's 55 or not, you have to drive safely, right? But for our illustration, you fulfilled the law because you made it safely from point A to point B, right? Okay, so you fulfilled the law. Okay, now, you call me up and you say, Brother Walt, I made it to Murray with no problems. I fulfilled all the law. I say, okay, I'll be there in 10 minutes.
Well, you're not going to be fulfilling the law.
Well, wait a minute. Wait a minute. He fulfilled the law. I don't have to fulfill the law.
Wrong.
You're wrong.
Isn't that the way that it's read right here? That's exactly how it's read right here. He did it. I don't have to do it.
Yeshua did it, so I don't have to keep the law because Yeshua did it.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeshua, though, if they would think and seriously think and turn around, they'd be like, He's going to ask us if we're supposed to emulate him, why didn't we do this?
Well, exactly, in our thinking, but in the church thinking.
Well,
what do they say? They say, he fulfilled it, therefore it's set aside, and I don't have to do it anymore, right? So I could be in Murray in 10 minutes, right?
If none of them are going away with it, then why do they stress the Ten Commandments? And for that matter, they want to keep the commandments. There's like 1,050 of them in the New Testament, and all of them can be hinged back to the 613, which is hinged back on the 10.
Which is hinged back to the 1.
Which is hinged back to the 1, exactly. So how can, it's double talk, and they don't even know what they're doing.
They don't realize, right? See, but what the reason I use this particular analogy is because it would be ludicrous for anyone else to think that they're going to drive from here to Murray, and just because Brother Chuck did what he was supposed to, fulfilling the law or whatever, then guess what? It's no good. Okay, so let's change the scenario. So he's the judge's son in Murray, and he did it all right. And so here I come flying through Murray at 110, and the policeman pulls me over. I said, wait a minute, the judge's son did it, so it's okay, I don't have to worry about it.
They're still going to lock you up, your license.
And you know it, right? And you know it. Okay, I want to conclude with one thing here. Okay, there's 613. We got 248 positive, 365 negative, okay? When the end comes, when we're standing before our judges, it says the sources tell us there's three malachim. Yeah, we'll translate it angels, but the word angel means a whole lot more, okay? The word malach means a whole lot more. One of them comes and said what he does is he stops and he tallies up all your sins. And he stops and he counts and he says, you've got X number of sins in your life. And so you're standing there and you're fraught with fear because, you know, man, that's a lot of, you know, when they calculate up how many you did, that's a lot, okay? Then the next guy, he comes along and he says, okay, you did X number of mitzvot. Okay? And so he says, you did this many mitzvot. And so you're hoping what? You're hoping that you did more mitzvah than you did mitzvot than you did averus, sin, right?
More tikkun than more damage.
You wanted to do a whole lot more repair than you did damage, right? What's the third guy going to look for? This guy counted sins. This guy counts mitzvot. What's the third guy going to count?
You could have done, but you didn't.
Mercy.
We hope he's mercy, huh? Okay. This guy, actually, he's the one, you remember the story where it said that the angel, while you're in your mother's womb, He takes 9 months and he teaches you the Torah. So he lights a candle over your head. You can see from one end of the world to the other. And then just as you start to come out and you start to cry, he strikes you on the mouth and you forget them all. This is the guy that spent all this time teaching Torah, and Gloria says he's your like your guardian angel, right? What question is he going to ask?
What did you do with what I taught you?
What did you do with what I taught you?
Can you say, well, I forgot it all. How am I supposed to know?
See, if you hadn't hit me on the lip, I would have remembered it all, and I would have been okay. What is he really looking for, though? You say, how did you say what you said?
What'd you do with it all?
What'd you do with it all? Okay. What is he really looking for?
To fulfill your potential.
Okay.
None of us are going to have fulfilled our potential, though.
Well,
I mean, very few of us. There, but relative, we're okay for me. Let me see for me. I will not have been fulfilled all my potential because part of my life, I would not have understood what my potential was.
Okay, but guess what? You don't think that all of that's taken into consideration? I mean, you can't say that I was supposed to know this before this time. You can't say that.
You're right.
In other words, did you do the best you could with what you had?
Okay, but actually, and you're basically right, but I just want to rephrase it a little bit. Did you become the person that you were supposed to be? You know, because when it's written down, so to speak, for you to come to the Olam Hazeh, this particular world, then you're going to give an answer. But the real answer is, you know, I taught you this Torah, I gave you all this information, but the whole goal of me teaching you the Torah was for you to become this individual. That's why you have the name that you have, right? Your name is your, not just your identity is supposed to be your characteristic, it's supposed to be your goal. Who you are to become your name, okay? So if you don't know what your name means, then you need to look up your name and see what it means, right? Because it's not by chance that you were given that name, okay? And of course, in, like here in America, we have two names, right? You know, Walter Ivan was my name. So I need to understand those two names. What does Walter mean? And what does Ivan mean?
Mighty warrior.
Okay, my first name, Walter, meant that I was a mighty warrior. Ivan is what?
John,
and John means?
Beloved.
Someone full of grace and compassion. Okay, so even though you're a mighty warrior, what? You have to have grace and compassion in the process, okay? But my point is that, guess what? You have one that comes and said, how many sins did you do? The other says, how many mitzvah did you? And the other says, did you achieve the potential of becoming the person that you were supposed to be?